It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
It's home to me.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Saving money on remodeling your home at Menards. Start your tile project off right with DentShield Tile Backer from Georgia Pacific. It's proven to protect against moisture in your walls and subfloors with a built-in water barrier, making it perfect to use in damp areas like kitchens and bathrooms. Plus, its easy-to-cut design makes installation a breeze. Save big on Georgia Pacific DentShield Tile Backer panels. On sale through March 2nd. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, checking out the series. You know what to do, like what you see, what you hear, hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify and Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Judy Collins. I get to talk to the legendary singer-songwriter about her Grammy-nominated album Spellbound that came out just last year, and being an honoree at the upcoming She Rocks Awards, too. We're going to talk about her how her recent songs were inspired by folks like Thomas Merton and the importance of her time in Colorado and in Greenwich Village, and peace and more as evergreen topics, of course. Judy's also going to discuss why she's been performing her 1967 album Wildflowers in full, and even staring down Mitch McConnell at a recent Washington, D.C. event. And I'll bring up her albums, Three, as it is, 60 years old, and True Stories and Other Dreams, that actually turns 50 years old this year as well. And we get an update on her next album, all that and more. It's Kyle Meredith with Judy Collins.
Hi there.
Let me say, first off, I know there's a handful of things going on. You released a record just last year at Spellbound. It is an absolutely wonderful record.
Thank you.
I put the headphones on, I lay down, and I just get lost in the stories and the piano sound. I mean, everything about it. It's just a beautiful record. And congratulations. I know it was Grammy nominated this year, too.
Yes, it was.
That's got to be something, though. I mean, I know it didn't win on the Grammy, but still to have it nominated, you know, for someone who's had so many albums, such a long career, does that still kind of bring the excitement when that stuff comes up?
Well, it's important because it shows that they're listening, and that's what we need. And if they're listening, so are lots of other people. And also, actually getting nominated, we always say, is like winning. And it was very exciting. It's always exciting because you go up to, down to, around to wherever you are when you want to get to the Grammys, which are always in Los Angeles, except once upon a time they were in New York, and that was fabulous, but they haven't been here since. I think it was probably 30 years ago. So it's great to go because you see so many friends, and I was able to be the presenter for 8 different categories, including Brandi Carlile and my old friend Bonnie Raitt. So it was very exciting seeing friends, hanging out, going to Clive Davis's pre-Grammy party, which is always a hell of a lot of fun. And so it's a wonderful thing.
Well, you know, there's sort of a nice coincidence on this record, Spellbound, too, because I'm here in Louisville, Kentucky, and you end up writing about Thomas Merton. And in fact, my office, the station, the radio station, is just a block away from the spot on the street where the Enlightenment happened.
Oh, my, how exciting. So it's for me, it's a very important song. I always tell the story that you know, I first read The Seven Story Mountain when I was in my 20s. And I was always intrigued. I'm not a Catholic, but I was always intrigued by Merton, because he associated himself with the meditators from the East, the Dalai Lama and Thich Nhat Hanh. And that's where he died, in Thailand. And he was at a big meditation event that was not in the capital itself, but somewhere out in the country. Anyway, the suspected murder of Thomas Merton kind of fits into my conspiracy theory mind, and also makes great sense because the church, as you know, had warned him many times about not writing about his anti-war beliefs and stop talking about Vietnam. And when he died or was murdered, which they now suspect is what actually happened, the church issued a papal bull saying Merton is never going to be sainted. Merton wrote 70 books. He was a massive influence in the anti-war and, you know, the spiritual areas certainly the Catholic Church covers. But it makes sense to me because he was in Thailand, which is where we were flying the bombers out using their runways to bomb Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia. And Thailand was crawling with CIA. And when the papal bull came out from the church after his death, they said he's never going to be sainted because of his opposition to the war in Vietnam, which could, of course, made me best friends with Thomas Merton, even though I already had been. So I had to write this song, and I love this song. It's intriguing to people. So it's a mystery, which is what I wanted to write.
Well, I definitely love seeing it in there. I had my own sort of moment like that in my 20s, and it wasn't with Merton, but it was one with one of his fellow Kentucky monks, I guess. Oh. There's another author named Daniel Quinn who wrote about a lot of the same stuff. Oh. And just kind of finding that stuff, of course, around here, you know, we're really familiar with Merton, but
of course with what is it called, the monastery, I always forget the name.
Yeah, and it's early for me as well, and it's nothing arriving, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Judy Collins.
I've asked other, you know, songwriters that, you know, that came up in the 60s and the same thing. I just had Graham Nash on the other day. We were sort of talking about something similar. And it's that thing, like, you know, for that to be such a life-changing moment and era and those ideologies, you know, for you coming up, and here we are 60 years later dealing with that same stuff. I said, as a songwriter, you know, how does, like, does that frustration, is that automatic that that's going to be in there? Like, you know, the trouble with peace, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Like, it's just a song that has to be sung still over and over and over.
Well, there's always material. I mean, that's the way the planet goes. You know, we don't run out of grief and excitement, exhalation, murder, as per the last few weeks that we've been so focused on somebody's trial. I just think if you read and if you digest what goes on in history, you realize that these things are never, they're never solved. I mean, look at the Chinese army of ceramic soldiers, thousands and thousands buried someplace so that he would, in heaven or wherever he went, he would have an army around him. It's still going on. I mean, we're always making our money off the weapons that we sell to other countries. I mean, it's a huge piece of our national value, which is made by murder. So I can't imagine that anybody would would be naive enough to think that it's over, because it's never over. It's not over. It's not even over till the fat lady sings. It's never over. It's the truth. And you have to keep sharp.
Well, as you mentioned, the material is great, at least, that comes out of it. I say that it, with probably a big slice of gallows humor that goes along with it. But
absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, so with that in mind, and looking even at Spellbound here, what are the type of characters that you find yourself writing about these days? Like I think about the guy in Grand Canyon, you know, and it every song seems to just to have, and some of them I assume are you, but some of them obviously aren't.
The guy in Grand Canyon, there's water in that song. And unfortunately, there's much less water in Grand Canyon nowadays. That's not why I wrote the song. When I was growing up in Colorado, one of the things that I would have become when I was married to my ex-husband, my starter husband, I always say, he and I were, we first of all, we ran a lodge in Rocky Mountain National Park for the summer before we settled down in Boulder, where he could get his degree. I had spent the whole first 19 years of my life making music, playing shows, singing on my father's radio show, playing with Mozart with a symphony orchestra, doing shows with my trio. I had a trio in junior high and grade school and high school, the Little Reds, they called us, because we did a version of Red Riding Hood. So when we landed in Boulder and my husband was in school, he said to me one day, you know, we don't have any money. I said, yeah, you're right, we don't. He said, why don't you get, I was working at the University of Colorado filing papers. And, you know, as terrible as a waiter, whatever one calls it nowadays. I spilled coffee down people's shirts and I dumped the scrambled eggs on somebody's head. You know, that's not, I was not destined to be in the food field. Anthony Bourdain, I was not headed to be. But he said to me, why don't you get a job doing something you know how to do? Well, in those days, you didn't think of playing the guitar and singing Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger was the avenue to a career. I mean, who ever dreamed of that? But I went down to a place called Michael's Pub in Boulder, and I got an audition, and the guy hired me, Michael Bisesi. He was a little disappointed because he hated folk music, but the audience loved me. So he had, what could he do? He had to hire me for $100 a week, five shows a week, three shows a night. I mean, this was not for sissies. this career is not for sissies, I'll tell you that.
You revisit that. I mean, even in the Girl from Colorado.
I could have been, because all of our friends at the University of Colorado many of our friends were in the Park Service. And my two of my best friends were Long Peaks Rangers, John Clark and Ernie Kunzel. They're both gone now, but they worked well. Ernie had a huge career in the Park Service all over the world, and he was part of rescue crews that went to help people out in various situations. And they were both Long's Peak Rangers. So it could have very well been that my friend Dick Barker, from whom I learned, he's only a lavender cowboy. The hairs on his chest, they were too. I learned all those old country songs from Dick Barker, and his family ran float trips down the Snake River, and I was on some of them. So I was very familiar with the Grand Canyon. There's a great book about the Grand Canyon, which some of you might want to reach out to find. It's called The Man Who Walked Through Time. And it's before they were river rafting. He was walking through the canyon in 1961. It's a brilliant book, brilliant, brilliant, wonderful book. So I've always had Grand Canyon on my mind, and the guy who ran the float trips down the Snake River merged into the guy who ran the float trips down the Colorado. And I'm a Colorado girl, so I write about, as you heard in Spellbound, the song called When I Was a Girl in Colorado. And it seems to be hitting all the high marks at my concert. So people are enjoying it. Yeah. You know, if you can't go to the Grand Canyon, you could at least sing about it. That's the thing about being a singer. You can do a lot of things in music that you probably couldn't handle in real life anymore.
Well, they do. They make for wonderful stories and wonderful characters in here. And sometimes they keep us guessing. So Alive, you know. By the way, So Alive, yes. When I fell in love with you, I was the last to know, has got to be one of my favorite lyrics that I've heard in a long time. I mean, there's a lot that he says in that.
Good.
Can I ask directly, who's that about, if anyone?
Yeah, my sister called me after she heard the song, and she said, who is that? And I said, well, of all the characters in the village at that point, it had to have been David Blue. He had a single bed. He always left by dawn. He was a character. He was wonderful.
It's
short term.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Judy Collins. Do you find that there's a reason why you're revisiting these moments in your life?
Oh, that's what we do when we grow older. We visit them. One of my friends who was a painter named Jules Zaliski, that was his name. Jules Zaliski, who was a very, very well thought of and well viewed painter who lived in New York, used to say, if you live until you're 20, you have enough to have a lifetime full of creative work, whether it's poetry or songs or books or whatever it is, because so many things happen before you're 20. And you have to revisit them to keep that spirit alive, because you're not going to do a lot of the things that you did when you were 20. Come on, let's face it. But you have memory. You have memory.
I was going to say, I've got a son. He's 15 right now, and I'm seeing that, like I'm aware of that time and how important it is, those coming of age years, you know, and seeing him kind of go through it right now. That's it's fun to watch from the other side just as much.
It's hell on wheels. Oh, boy. Is it hard to be a teenager? Oh, my God. Well, give him my best.
Good luck with life.
Tell him it'll all work out if he can just hold on.
Right. I also want to bring up that you're going to be honored on the She-Rock Awards. That's coming up next month.
I'm very thrilled. This is quite an honor for me.
Yeah. What does it mean for you? I mean, this is specific. This is women in music and in arts. You know, just the fact that they reached out. I mean, what does this award mean versus, you know, something like the Grammys or something like that?
Well, it's a very kind of inner thing, because it's all women talking about, singing about, working with, celebrating women. And we do have a unique position in this world of music because we're not men.
That's an easy place to start. You know,
people ask me, and I think most of the women that are being honored on the She-Rock galas, I think most of us have determined that it doesn't make any difference that we're women. My father always said, you know, you can do anything you want because you're a woman. And I never had any issues with that. I was never, you see, I don't know that I'm underpaid, because who knows, really. Given the nature of the business and how things go up and down, how they swerve from side to side from year to year. Sometimes it's big time. Sometimes it's a big check. Sometimes it's small. It doesn't make any difference. You go forward. And if you have that gene, the alpha woman gene, you're going to do it, whatever it is. So I think that I share that with most of the women who are, many of the women, maybe all of the women who are honored by She-Rock. I think there's something another word I'll call you about later. It's an intrinsic given that women who survive in this complicated sea have something that takes them through and above the complications that it might involve for being female rather than male. And I think it's grit, and I think it's determination. I think it's being yourself and strongly bent towards what you want to do. It wouldn't matter whether you were a painter or a dancer or an artist or a concert violinist. If you're female, you have to have that extra something. And I think many of these women, most of them must have it. I certainly do, because I was determined. I was determined from an age of tiny, you know, tiny little girl standing at the piano trying to get the keys to work.
I mean, determination has to be so much a part of it too. The obsession, the this is the only thing that I know, which is something I can relate to. Yeah.
It's the only thing I know. It's the only thing I can do. You know, I sucked as I told you, at being a waitress or being a waiter. I did work in a couple restaurants when we didn't have much money. We were in Central City in Colorado. I fall apart under certain areas like math, but I've gotten to be good at math because I have to be.
I'm still not so good on you, but you know, I've got a kid who shows me how to do it every now
yeah,
and then.
Yeah, he'll show you now. He'll take you to all the proper sites and show you how to get them on your screen.
Right. Right. Most of my math has to do with album anniversaries, and that's fine with me these days. That's my job anyway. So, which I should bring up, you know, a few of those, like, first off, you recently performed Wildflowers. You've been performing Wildflowers in full. And what in the place where you'd performed it 60 years prior too? What was that like? I mean, that's got to be a mind trip.
At Town Hall.
Yeah.
Well, it's come up because people love that album. It was number seven. It's the seventh album that I made. I starting in 61, and it was in the middle. There was In My Life, which had Pyrogenian in my life, and both of the first songs of Leonard Cohen's on it. And then came Wildflowers, which had the Joni Mitchell song on it, Both Sides Now, and three of my own songs, my first songs, and three of Leonard's songs, one of which, Priests. I was the only one of three people other than Leonard to record that song, Priests. It's a very intriguing song. The whole album is filled with things that are so remarkable, and I haven't sung them in many years. I haven't sung Chanson des Vieux Amants, the Jacques Brel, Since You've Asked, which was my first song, and Albatross. Sometimes I sing Albatross, but most of the others, Lasso di Donna, which is a medieval song. The orchestrations for this album were done by Josh Rifkin, who was my friend and my producer's friend. He did a lot of things for Nonesuch Records, which was the other label that Jack Holzman started to satisfy his curiosities that didn't fall into his folk rock roll label, Elektra, which had me, but it also had the Doors. And so I think it's unique, and people have brought up the fact that I should do this album in full for a long time with the orchestrations. When I called Josh Rifkin to tell him, he was beside himself. I mean, he still teaches at Berkeley in Boston, and one of these days we'll get him to conduct. But all the orchestrations were newly configured off of the originals, so they're as close to the originals as you can get. And we're singing them with orchestras. We've just done our sixth with the Harlem Chamber Orchestra at Town Hall, as you said. And we've done big orchestras in Florida. We've done now a total of six, but we've got hundreds that are asking for it, if you'll pardon the expression. And they're getting it.
And we'll be right back, right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Judy Collins. I mean, just to be able to revisit those, you know, to be able to live inside those songs again, you know, after this. And yeah.
It's a game changer, I must say. I was taken aback. I then said to my audience, who has been making noises about this album for a number of years, you were right. You were right. It's about time. It's very different. It's very exciting. It's a center of creativity in an early time in the 60s. It resonates with what was going on with the Beatles because of their bringing in all of those orchestral parts and working with an orchestral designer or musician or writer or creator. And Josh was our Beatles guy.
You know, along with that, too, your album 3 actually turns 60 this month. It hits the big round 6-0 on that.
Yes.
Like, Masters of War was on that.
Yes, Masters of War.
Which is an amazing reading. What was it like to sing a song like that in 1963?
It was welcome. I mean, everybody was fighting and marching and against the war. And you have to be, you know, I was in Washington Monday night, a week ago tonight, and I was in the Capitol, in the Mansfield room, in the Senate part of the Capitol. And I was there with about 100 people, a lot of them senators, a lot of them I knew. And I was singing Amazing Grace for this dinner. And I was looking straight at Mitch McConnell when I stood up to sing Amazing Grace. But before I sang it, I said, the last time I was here, I was arrested for my participation in an anti-war group that met here, and it was called Redress of Congress. It's in our Constitution that we have the right to redress Congress on an issue that we have problems with. So I was able to say that to Mitch. He didn't think it was very funny that I was taken away in handcuffs, but I thought it was, it's supposed, you know, this group is a non-denominational, it's not non-denominational, it's unbiased on either side. So it is where we should be meeting, that is, everybody from every side of the aisle. And so that's the thing about it, which is so wonderful. It's called the Academy of Achievement, and there are a lot of people in it who wouldn't speak under normal circumstances, certainly if they were on the floor of the Congress. But for an evening of music and talk and humor, they'll get together.
Well, to have that opportunity, too. I mean, that's, to do
so
that.
So I have sung Masters of War straight on ever since I learned it in 62 and recorded it. It was the first or the second song of Dylan's that I recorded. He had just started writing, and I was on the scene. So I was lucky. I lived in the village. I heard him. I knew him. I saw him. I'd known him in Colorado when he was Robert Zimmerman.
Little Bobby.
Or he changed his name, Little Bobby.
Along that line, by the way, True Stories and Other Dreams is also 50 this year. We talk about the big round anniversaries. And Cooking with Honey is such a fun little song. I hadn't heard it in forever. I went back and listened to it before this interview, and it's just so good.
You always cook with honey to sweeten up the night. I haven't sung it for years, but maybe I'll pull it out.
It's a great one. I really do. I think I played it 2 or 3 times and then played it for my wife because she had never heard it. So I heard it a few more times on that one.
Name of the girl who wrote it. I'll think of it.
I did look it up, and I wasn't familiar with her work beforehand.
No. It was somebody who was sort of, and I'll have to find out who it is and whether she's around still.
How's the progress on the next album? I've heard you say that you have worked on enough that you could follow Spellbound out pretty quickly if you wanted.
Yes, I'm piecing it together. I'm not sure if it'll be fully mine, because what I have found in these past couple of years is 3 or 4 songs that I must sing, and they're by other people. I must sing them, and I have always been compelled in that way. I mean, it's not something that I can fight, if you know what I mean. That's the impulse that has created my career, after all. I knew what songs to pull, what songs to sing that were mine, that were going to be mine. I knew it when I heard them. I didn't have to analyze anything. I know it when I hear it. So I cannot ignore those impulses. So we'll see. And if I've got anything that comes up to those levels, which was always, I think, the issue. I mean, I've done, since Leonard Cohen asked me why I wasn't writing songs in 1966, and I wrote Since You've Asked, my first song. Since then, I've written and recorded about 60 songs, which are scattered through, I mean, starting with Since You Ask and Albatross and Che Guevara and my father and The Blizzard, for instance, which still is one of my big show tunes because it's so huge. Somebody said to me the other day, when people hear, I can hear it in the audience, when they start to hear the story about the stranger and the snowstorm and the relationship between the stranger and this person who is me, who's telling the story, there's a kind of a hush that comes over that's really dead silence, but people are thinking. And somebody said they're wondering if it's going to turn out badly. I mean, everything, so many things in life do turn out badly, but it doesn't, of course. It comes to around in a circle that lifts it up into something that makes people kind of go crazy at the end of the song. They're so excited that it didn't turn out badly.
Mark of a great artist right there to keep us all hanging on every single time. And you do. You seriously do. I love this record. Congratulations on the nominations and the awards. Congratulations on what's coming up with the She Rock Awards as well.
Thank you.
And Judy, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it today. It's been a real honor.
Thanks, Kyle. I had a great time. You have a great day. Say hello to your 15-year-old for me. Tell him that I was once 15. You'll hardly believe it.
And my thanks to Judy Collins. The newest album is called Spellbound, and sounds like we got one waiting in the wings as well. Big thanks to Judy. Big thanks to you for checking out the episode in the series. Again, please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. Again, it's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. Of course, you can also find me on the old social media spots. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all three of them. The address is at Kyle Meredith. So do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.